Chapter 7. I finally went to Paris, and all I got was a face-eating dinosaur. New email from Chip Collins to Julie Taylor. Date, February 29, 2020. Subject, I finally went to Paris, and all I got was a face-eating dinosaur. Hi, Julie. So this dinosaur is about to eat my face off, and I look down at Gigi, my last look at her ever, shielding her from the inevitable. And I think, you know what? Maybe this is a better way for all of us to go, mauled by a velociraptor, versus the unknown, bottomless horror of the entire multiverse coming undone. I know this is the worst possible time for a memory, but remember we took Gigi to that dino park in Florida when we went to see your mom? It was that classic rundown Florida tourist trap experience, the poor plaster dinosaurs decaying and fading in the sun, herons making actual nests in the ones with the weather-beaten, exposed innards. It was like an accidental recreation of the extinction of the dinosaurs, happening right now in slow motion. But this time the poor beasts were succumbing to the slow march of time and neglect, rather than the quick knockout punch of a meteor. All I could think was, did we really just pay $30 to get in here? Wait, Chip, look. And I looked down and Gigi was petting the leg of a T-Rex, staring straight up at its face in total awe.
Big Bobo.
No, honey, that's not a Bobo, that's a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Tyra!
Yeah, I guess. Like Tyra Banks. Sure. She your girlfriend? Gigi nodded and did her little jig.
Tyra! Friend!
And so we climbed the rickety, held together with rust ladder so Gigi could sit on her new friend's back and pretend to ride her like a pony. While you and me wondered which we would die from first. A, this flimsy contraption collapsing under the weight of three people. Or B, the tetanus we were all going to get after we cut ourselves on one of the million sharp, rusty edges. We didn't die, and in fact, we had a blast, and it was Gigi's favorite thing ever, and I realized once again why tourist traps should continue to exist, despite all their kitsch and disregard for safety and sanitation, because they give you something to remember, another memory to smile at or roll your eyes at or laugh about when you're old and gray. That shit is the bomb. Fuck, where was I? Oh yeah, about to have my face eaten off. So I peer back up from Gigi into the dinosaur's eyes, its soulless, menacing eyes. And I can hear Gigi calling out,
Tyra, Tyra, friend.
And I'm thinking, oh baby, I'm sorry to say this, but you are so very wrong. And the thing snaps its claw at my face and opens its maw. Here comes lunch. And I close my eyes and clutch Gigi and wait for death. And I hear, Tyra, do I look like a Tyra? I open one eye. Who said that? Ahem, do I look like a Tyra? Holy fuck. A talking dinosaur. Wait, whoops. You're asking, how the hell did you get from let's go to Paris to talking dinosaur? By the way, we're not talking about Barney the talking dinosaur. We're talking about Barney's exact scary as shit opposite, but more on that later. I know. By now I should be better at keeping you up to speed. It's been 3 books already, for Christ's sake. I shouldn't have to rely on flashbacks to get you back to the present. Sorry. Just one more wee little flashback, I promise. Never again. I know, never say never, but trust me. Yeah, okay, forget I said trust me. Whatever, it's flashback time. So Tesla proclaims, On to Paris! Scribbles a few notes into his journal, and Barb is practically tearing a hole through the ITA door to start her adventure. And I'm like, don't you think 7 people's kind of a lot? Well, 6 people and Bobo, but it's a lot, right? We should leave the kids here with Barb.
Excellent idea, Master Chip.
But Gigi and Hannah aren't thinking this is such an excellent idea. They both plod over to me and pull my shirt so I lean down close. Gigi whispers,
I not see mommy too?
No, I'm not going to see mommy. I'm going to find some stuff, to build a thing, to make the bad orange sesame chicken thing go away so we can both go see mommy.
We stay alone?
Damn, I know where this is going. No, honey, Great Aunt Barb is going to stay with you. Gigi nods, but her eyes are getting wet, and she's starting to sniff. Oh man, she's trying to be a good girl, trying so hard to be brave, but now her whole body is shaking, hers and Hannah's both. It's no use. I fold like a cheap lawn chair. Fuck it. They're coming with us.
Cheap! Language!
Berries, okay? Berries. They're coming with us. Gigi and Hannah squeal through their tears and jump into my arms. And I get it. We're all we've got, this little family of ours. We might be all that's left of 2020. We might not have a home to come home to. So for now, we're each other's home. I squeeze them a little tighter. Okay, you're coming with us. But Aunt Barb's your point person, got it? Like Mary Poppins, like your magic nanny, okay? They both nod again and look up at Barb. She whips out a hanky from her Mary Poppins bag and dabs their eyes dry.
There, good as new. Now before we head out, girlfriends, I've got a little something for you.
She reaches once more into her purse and pulls out something hidden in her hands. Then she puts her fingers behind the girl's ears and pulls them out, revealing 2 quarters. The girls are amazed. I don't think they've ever seen the old quarters from behind your ears trick. And they clap like she's an even better magician than Tesla. Barb slips the quarters into that little extra pocket in their jeans.
Hey, that's what that tiny pocket's for. Quarters.
And she whispers,
now don't spend it all on handsome boys.
And pulls their earlobes. Well, if we die in the past and collapse this whole thing, at least we landed the most kick-ass babysitter in the multiverse. Barb rocks. Pete pats me on the back. Good call, dude. Barb turns to us, holding Gigi and Hannah's hands, even more excited now that she gets to go on an adventure and play Mary Poppins.
Hokey dokey, gents. Lead on.
So we're walking and walking and walking. You know how it is in here. I can't tell if we're walking for 10 minutes or 5 hours. All of us pretty quiet, with a mix of hope and excitement and fear and dread. And after a while, I see Aunt Barb tug Pete's shirt and say low,
so I never got married?
No. You used to tell me it would get in the way of all the romance. She grins.
Ooh, tell me more.
Apparently, you were quite the catch. Lots of suitors. You would joke and say they were all Mr. Right. They just weren't Mr. The One. The last boyfriend I remember, and you were in your 70s at the time, he was a cowboy. A real-life 10-gallon hat, cattle-wrangling good old boy from Montana. Easily 20 years younger than you. I don't know how the hell he wound up in Brooklyn. I think you said he saw a picture of you on AOL and rode a horse all the way here to meet you. She laughs.
That's just like something I'd say. What's AOL?
The early days of the internet.
What's the internet?
Oh, boy. So they walk a little while longer, quiet. Then she asks,
so what happened to the cowboy? He sounded perfect.
You said you ditched him because he smoked too much.
Ha!
She digs into her bag for a cigarette and lights up.
Smokes too much? For me?
Yeah, he was like a 3-pack-a-dayer. Mom wouldn't even let him in the house.
Your mom. She'd be my niece. Gosh, that's weird.
I stride up to them. You know what's weird? Pete looks around. Everything? Well, yeah, of course, but also, once we get to this other dimension, how the hell are we getting to Paris? You know how long it takes to fly a plane or sail a boat over there? It's the whole Pacific Ocean. It's the Atlantic Ocean, dude. Whatever, I'm thinking we don't have that kind of time. Tesla turns his head to us, still walking in the lead, smiling that inventor smile of his, that smile he has when he knows something special and can't wait to share it. But he doesn't say anything. Barb puts out her cigarette with her heel and Bobo, walking behind us, picks it up and pops it in his mouth. I mean, come on, Bobo, do you like the taste? Are you eating them or saving them for later or something? Do Pall Malls have some kind of nutritional value I'm not aware of? Or are you helping clean up the multiverse one cigarette butt at a time? Tesla interrupts my really important train of thought with that sneaky smile again. I jog up to him. Okay, Nicola, the suspense is killing me. How do we get all the way to Paris? He stops, looks down at the in controller, takes a few more steps to the next door, and hands the in controller to Bobo.
Ahem, as you know, young sirs, I have been traveling the interdimensional transfer apparatus for a very long time. There are many ways to travel great distances.
And with the deft hand of someone who's done this a zillion times, Tesla dials in 0000 on the latch and pulls open the door with its familiar whoosh.
Wow.
Through the doorway, the sun is setting, and we're in the middle of a forest, except we're 3 stories up, floating above the tree line, so we can see pretty far into the distance the lights of a city. It's beautiful. Wait, there it is. The Eiffel Tower.
Yes, Master Chip.
But how?
This dimension, and remember, there are infinite possibilities, Chip, has 2 advantageous qualities. First, the rotation of the Earth in this dimension is ever so slightly slower. So when the interdimensional transfer apparatus was first formed here, instead of appearing in New York, it appeared in the Domanial Forest, just outside of Paris.
Cool. I look at the ground, guessing about 30 feet below us, and sniff the air. Uh-oh, that familiar aroma coming from either Gigi or Hannah. Odor alert, how do we get down?
I wasn't finished, Chip.
Don't you want to know the second advantageous quality in this dimension?
Sure, but please tell me it has something to do with unlimited free diapers, because my nose is telling me one of these angels is going to explode in T-minus 2 minutes, and that's not negotiable. Tesla ignores me. And apparently the smell. Amazing.
The second advantageous quality of this dimension is that Marie Curie, unlike in our home dimension, is still alive. And with her superior knowledge of radioisotopes, she should be able to help us with the construction of the multiverse entropy restabilizing DNA energizer.
Cool. Great. Okay, now how do we get down? I'm not kidding, Nicola. This hallway's about to get so toxic, we might have to jump. Tesla goes to check his watch in his vest pocket, but realizes it's not there. I reach into my jeans and take it out, the old stopwatch he gave me after the Blue Juice missile crisis. I never leave home without it, always keeping it perfectly timed, his sweet reminder to me that I should evermore look forward. I turn it over a couple of times, then place it in Tesla's palm. It's ironic, Nicola. You gave me this with a message to always look forward, and here we are looking back to 1947 for answers. He admires his watch, smiling.
1945.
1947. Come on, Nicola, I'm just getting the hang of this. It's 1947. Don't throw me off.
All right, then I won't tell you that because of this dimension's slightly slower Earth rotation, each day, week, month, and year is slightly longer relative to our own, and that we are peering into what they consider 1945, the month of May, I believe.
Yeah, good. Don't tell me that. Just tell me how we get down. My eyes are starting to sting. Tesla grins again, that grin, and points down. Maybe 100 yards away, something's rumbling through the brush, snapping branches, tearing this way like a bat out of, or maybe into, hell.
Mon ami, I am sorry to be late.
A candy apple red roadster convertible blasts out into the little clearing below us, dragging plants and shit, leaving 2-inch deep skid marks in the dirt. Squirrels are leaping out of the way for dear life. And behind the wheel is an old French woman with big black goggles, laughing, waving a journal. Huh. They told me Marie Curie was the Nobel Prize-winning physicist and chemist, but she looks like a professional rally car driver to me. And those funky goggles, big black orbs, they remind me of someone. I turn to Bobo. Hey, buddy, look, one of your own.
Bee's knees.
So the old lady screeches to a stop right under us, dusts off her dress, goes to the trunk, and pulls out a crossbow. I swear to God, every time I think I've seen the strangest shit, something like this happens. Marie Curie, Nobel Prize-winning physicist and chemist, has gone insane and is about to fucking kill us with a crossbow. Yeah, I think this one takes the cake. Oh wait, there's a rope attached to the end of the arrow.
Schwing! Bouge de là! Get out of the way!
She screams this after the arrow comes hurtling dangerously close to my face, instead of before. Gee, thanks, Marie. Okay, long story ever so slightly less long. The ass end of this rope is a ladder. So we fasten it down good, shimmy down, me and Pete carrying the diaper grenades. I mean our precious daughters. And the second I hit the ground, I rush over to Madame Curie, no introductions, and hold Gigi up to her nose, and I don't even have to say the word diapers in French. Which I couldn't do anyway because I don't know a single word of French other than oui. And she scrambles over to the trunk, rummaging around, and shouts,
Voila!
No, it's not disposables or even diapers at all. It's a Nazi flag. She tears it right down the middle and hands the pieces to Barb, along with a smile. Barb curtsies, a little in awe, and says,
Merci. Ravi de vous rencontrer.
Ah, oh, you speak French. Yes, you are very welcome, and it is a pleasure to meet you, too.
I shake her hand. Hello, Madame Curie. Chip Collins. Why do you have a Nazi flag in your trunk?
'Twas for later, for the burning. But I think this is an even more appropriate end for that evil thing, no?
She laughs. I watch Barb going to work like a ninja diaper changer. Nazi flag burning? Am I missing something, Nicola? Tesla looks down at his watch again.
I was right. May 1945. You aren't missing anything, Mr. Chip. On the contrary, I believe we are just in time.
He walks over to Madame Curie and they exchange a bone-crushing embrace, and Tesla leans down and whispers in her ear,
Marie, it is so very nice to see you again. But I'm afraid there is no time to celebrate. We need your help.
She scoffs at him playfully.
I will help, of course, my dear friend. But there is always time to celebrate.
So we stuff ourselves into her race car and speed off towards Paris. As we get closer to the Champs-Élysées, we slow to a crawl. There are people everywhere, clogging every street, parading around, singing, popping champagne bottles, waving at us. Gigi and Hannah are waving back. It's obviously a parade for them, right? Wait, I was being sarcastic, but maybe it is a parade for them? Hey, Nicola, is this for us? Like, did all these people know you were coming? Shaking his head and smiling, Tesla points to our right. People waving French, American, and British flags, and a nearby bin containing what I assume is a Nazi flag ablaze and turning to ash. Suddenly, two fighter planes buzz right over our heads, insanely loud, dropping flares into the street. And way down the end of the avenue, fireworks explode over the Arc de Triomphe. Yes, Julie, it took all of this for me to realize. World War II? Madame Curie nods and smiles the happiest smile I may have ever seen, waving to all the people she's nearly plowing down with her car.
Yes, Chip. May 9, 1945. The Nazis have surrendered. Peace is ours. It is Victory Day.
We pass a band playing the U.S. national anthem, and Julie, I gotta say, I have never been more proud to be an American. We're actually here, at the exact moment we defeated the bad guys. The moment we won. The moment the forces for good worked together and peace prevailed in the world. I look over at Pete and he says, "Wow, this is awesome." And when I lean across, he's like, "But it's still not hug time." Oh well. Some random person hands me a bottle of champagne. "Levez un verre à l'avenir." Aunt Barb pats my knee.
I think he said, "Raise a glass to the future."
And so I raise the bottle and take a swig and feel the rush of victory and peace and the hope of the future. This rocks. Wait, the future. I think about the orange tear and the fabric of the multiverse. I watch Gigi and Hannah giggle and dance for their fans, oblivious and giddy with little kid joy. I watch Aunt Barb taking pictures. Wait, she's got a camera in that bag too? And doing her best Queen Elizabeth wave to her subjects. She is having the time of her life. I look at Pete dousing himself and Tesla in champagne, both of them laughing like teenagers. And finally, I look down at Bobo, and I don't know why he never answers me, but I ask him, "How does it end?" And he gives me the finger. Thanks, Bobo.